From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much. Fun show for you today. We got the head of the National Institutes of Health, Dr. Francis Collins, coming on to play our game. But I am looking forward to telling him about this weird rash I've got. But first, this is our last show before the Mayan apocalypse next week. So since we're all going to be dead, except for John Cusack and his estranged wife, I thought I would just tell you that, you know, I'm really grateful to you all for listening. So I didn't have to go and get a real job, and I just wanted to say that. Well, I had a chance. Carl, is there anything you want to say before it's too late?
Yes, there is, Peter. At least the global apocalypse means an end to you riding on my coattails.
Well, give us a call one last time. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Wendy.
Hey.
I live in Oakland.
Hey, Wendy, how are things in Oakland?
Things are, by our lights, a little chilly. By yours, it's fabulous.
Thank you for handicapping for us. I appreciate being merciful. Do you live up there in the Oakland Hills?
No, I live in the flats.
You do?
Where the real people live.
Do you gaze up into the Oakland Hills with envy?
No.
No?
You can't go anywhere without a car in the hills. It's very tiresome.
I appreciate your rationalization of your poverty.
We do that a lot.
I understand. Welcome to the show, Wendy. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, the man behind the podcast, Too Beautiful to Live, is Mr. Luke Burbank is here.
Hey, Wendy.
Hello, Luke.
Next, a comedian performing this Wednesday at Cameo in Brooklyn, Jesse Klein is here.
Hello, Wendy.
Hello.
And a humorist blogging more than is healthy at cartalk.com, it's Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Tom.
Welcome to the show, Wendy. You're, of course, going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotations from the week's news. Are you ready to play our game?
I am ready.
Here is your first quote.
Don't make Christmas plans.
That was, according to some House Republicans, what John Boehner told them because they really need to stick around and work on what?
Resolving the fiscal cliff crisis.
Yes, indeed, the fiscal cliff again. We have been driving at this cliff for so long, it's like one of these optical illusions. We never get there. Imagine you're a member of Congress just getting to the end of the most divisive, partisan, unproductive congressional session in memory. And then you find out you're going to be locked in with them through Christmas. It's the least wonderful time of the year.
You know, I saw that headline, you know, Boehner says, don't make plans for Christmas. I thought it was about the Mayan apocalypse.
Right. No, wait a minute. This could be great. This could be like, you know, we haven't had a really good Christmas special, a new one, in years. We've been watching the old Rankin Bass ones for decades. This will be great. This will be the fiscal cliff Christmas. John Boehner already has a mostly claymation face anyway. Did you know that? In order for John Boehner to speak, animators have to come out and move him just a tiny fraction of an inch every time. It's terrifying.
I've been doing a lot of independent cliff research on my own by watching The Roadrunner. And one of the things that I figured out is that as long as we don't look down and realize that we're in midair, we should be fine.
Yes.
You mean the way we've been doing for years?
Yeah.
It's the Wile E. Coyote school of economics.
It's just the looking down that gets you.
Yeah.
I would like to Thelma and Louise it right off the fiscal cliff.
Here is your next quote.
This is bad news, and more bad news covered in a double layer of extra bad news.
That was a writer on Gizmodo, tech site, not describing the new Taco Bell burrito. No. He was talking about a satellite launched into orbit by what country this week?
Oh, this is terrible. I don't know this.
A country that has nuclear ambitions. It's kind of aggressive toward its neighbor, especially the one to the south.
It's not Canada.
Well, this must be North Korea.
It is, in fact, North Korea. On the anniversary of the death of Kim Jong-il, the dear leader, the North Koreans successfully launched a rocket into orbit. The tribute was announced by the current dictator, Kim Jong-un, the supreme leader, and his son, Kim Jong-Uma Thurman, the adorable leader.
Is this really threatening? Like, it just seems like North Korea, it's like when your toddler, like, first takes those steps and they just make it from one parent to another across the room.
No,
you know
this
what
is,
I mean?
This is more like when your toddler steals your car.
Have you heard, though, that there is actual concern that this thing is wobbling?
Yeah.
NORAD says that, which is the North American Missile Monitoring, when they're not following the reindeer around Christmas time on local TV news.
The other thing they do, apparently.
They do something else. I didn't realize.
I know, right?
I thought that worked one night a year.
By the way, if you were going to attack America, do it Christmas Eve, because they're looking for the reindeer, apparently.
Oh, my God. It just dawned on me what he's up to. It's in a polar orbit, isn't
That's
it?
True.
But they're he's going after Christmas.
They're worried that it's going to crash into another satellite or something else that is operational in space and very expensive.
Here's the funny thing. It's like this is their blow against the decadent West. They're not able to hurt us otherwise, but they'll destroy our DirecTV.
Yeah. I'm not going to get to watch the last episode of Homeland. How ironic.
I'm sure they have comprehensive on that missile, though, so... I mean, if they hit us, I'm sure it's probably covered.
Yes. All right, very good, Wendy. Here is your last quote.
Wow, they were still making those?
That was a writer at CNET saying what pretty much everybody thought when they heard that the Sony Corporation was finally ceasing production of what?
I'm assuming it has to be the Walkman.
It is, in fact, the Walkman. Yeah. It first happened 33 years ago, the first time you were ignored by a friend or family member in favor of a small metal box in their hand. Back then, it was the first Sony Walkman, a machine that played cassette tapes. Now, cassettes, for our younger listeners, are... Oh, wait, this is NPR. We don't have any. Now, think about this. Can you believe they were making these things up until now?
Well, there goes my Christmas list. What the hell am I going to do now?
If you think things are depressing at, like, the iPad factories, imagine how worse it is at the last Walkman factory until they close it.
You know, the yellow one was cool.
Yeah, like
I wanted
that
yellow
Walkman.
Sport one. Does anyone hear?
Yes.
Is anyone else here 1,000 years old?
Yes.
The yellow, I never got the yellow one. Hint.
I have one in my desk drawer. I'm not making that up.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do. You want it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah. You can no longer get tapes for it.
I have all of my old mixtapes. I would like to listen to them on my yellow sports walkman.
Well, that's why I still have my cassettes, because, you get rid of the commercial cassettes, but all those mixtapes.
Yeah,
Hot Side and a Cold Side.
Yeah, exactly.
And always 4 seconds of the DJ after the song ended before you hit stop.
Pause, play.
Yeah.
Pause, play. Pause, play, record.
Greatest hits of the 60s.
But, I mean, we have to memorialize this device, because it was the Walkman that ushered in the era of us being able to finally ignore other human beings in public. The first person to put on headphones and walk down the street refusing to meet anybody in the eye was like the Rosa Parks of the modern age.
I don't know if this is just a New York-level thing that I now do with my iPod, but it's gotten to the point where I want to ignore people. Like, even if I'm not in the mood to listen to music, I will just have my earphones in as a signifier of don't talk to me.
Strangely, I've never had any problem with keeping people from talking to me in public. I don't know why. Carl, how did Wendy do in our quiz?
Wendy, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail.
Well done.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Right now, panel, it is time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Tom, Cathay Pacific Airways is known as one of the best and one of the lispiest airlines in the world. But now, to protest what they feel are unfair wages, their flight attendants are refusing to do what?
Oh, is this the one where they're not going to they're not going to smile?
That's
or be
exactly
nice to
right.
People.
They're not going to smile anymore.
Boy, you couldn't. You know, most airlines you wouldn't notice.
Usually when you see somebody frowning and looking unhappy on an airplane, it's all of the other passengers. But now the flight attendants on Cathay Pacific are threatening to withhold smiles until their union gets a 5% pay raise. This seems strange. Like, this is going to, like, apply economic pressure?
Where's this airline from?
Cathay.
Oh. that's not a right-to-smile country,
no,
is it?
No, it isn't, no. It's so weird to, like, have a strike, a labor action that could be so easily broken by tickling. Thank you, guys. Right now, of course, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our games on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Peter from Honoka'a, Hawaii.
Honoka'a?
Yes.
That's got like 3 letters and 8 glottal stops, right? That's how you say things in Hawaii. Where is Honoka'a?
It is on the Big Island of Hawaii.
I see.
On the northeast side.
So you get to live there. Do you live the life of paradisical pleasure that I would imagine that a Hawaiian lives?
Whatever you imagine, that's what's happening.
And you're too far away for me to check that, so... Well, welcome to the show, Peter. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction, of course. Carl, what is Peter's topic?
If I won the lottery, I'd buy a brand new answering machine cassette.
Money can't buy you class, but it can buy you a whole lot of something you've always wanted. This week, our panelists are going to read you 3 stories of people coming into a lot of money and finding creative ways to spend it. Guess that true story. You'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
I am.
First, let's hear from Luke.
Carrie's Gas and Go in Defiance, Kansas looks like your typical mini-mart. It's a cramped place packed to the ceiling with soda, beef jerky, cassette tapes that time and apparently decent musical taste forgot, and in the back, under a heat lamp, trays of JoJo potatoes. JoJo potatoes that made Jack Lee Brooks a millionaire. You see, Jack loved the JoJo's so much he'd swing by Carrie's every day during his lunch break from the local refinery. And on one of those days, back in 2010, Debbie the cashier talked him into buying up a Powerball ticket, a ticket that turned out to be worth $140 million. Well, that there money didn't change me, said Brooks when reached recently for comment. Me and my wife, we's just folks like before, still up at dawn every morning, still love them JoJo potatoes. It does bear noting that Brooks doesn't have to go quite as far for his beloved potatoes now, since he had an exact replica of the mini-mart built on his property next to his house. It's staffed 24 hours a day. He and his wife are the only customers, and yes, Debbie is there working the midday shift. It was a little weird at first, says Debbie, because he insisted on having that little bell thingy ding every time he came in, but I could totally see him when he'd leave the back porch, so I knew he was coming. Debbie makes the potatoes with the same care she used when working at the original Gas and Go, dumping the box of institutional-grade frozen potato parts into a fryer, putting them in paper trays, and rotating them out from under the heat lamp every 18 days.
A lottery winner in Kansas just wants his JoJo potatoes and makes sure that he gets them whenever he wants. Your next story of money burning a hole in somebody's pocket comes from Jesse Klein.
Nathan Budman from Lower Falls, Nebraska, was a computer programmer, but his real passion was movies. Ever since his parents took him to see Star Wars, he'd been a film buff, although he often complained that if he was the director, he would have ended the story differently. So when he recently sold his internet startup for $500 million, he quit his job and set about making his lifelong dream a reality, hiring the original actors from his favorite movies and shooting new endings. He is currently reshooting the finale for several movies, including Jaws, a film he'd always loved but couldn't watch without wanting a different conclusion. Quote, as he's swimming back to shore, Richard Dreyfuss should get eaten by a school of piranhas. No one would see it coming, Nathan said to a reporter from Set This Week, where an irritated-looking Richard Dreyfuss was thrashing about in a 4-foot pool. Nathan was shuttling back and forth between New Jaws and the soundstage next door, where he was concurrently shooting the new ending for Pretty Woman. Nathan has scripted a new final scene where instead of climbing up Julia Roberts' fire escape to tell her he loves her, Richard Gere finds out he has an STD and the two never speak again. It's much more relatable, Nathan wrote in a publicity statement.
An internet millionaire decides to use his money to remake the movies the way he wanted them made. And your last story of a big spender comes from Tom Baudet.
Serbian tennis star Novak Djokovic has it all. Talent, good looks, fame, money, and these days, the world's entire supply of donkey cheese. The cheese, known as poule, is white, crumbly, and made from donkey milk. It recently received the distinction of the world's most expensive cheese at $500 per pound, in part because 1 pound of cheese requires over 3 gallons of milk from donkeys. I didn't know you could milk a donkey, you might be asking. We looked it up. Turns out if it's a mammal, you can milk it. Hyenas, kangaroos, gophers, Labrador retrievers, to name just a few whose world supply of cheese might personally be obtained. As for donkey milking, that appears to be a Serbian thing. All the donkey cheese on the planet is made at one Serbian farm managed by Slobodan Simic, who says that having Djokovic buy up his inventory will save a lot of effort having to deal with various restaurants. One can imagine a day when all three of them might call.
All right. One of these people got rich and did what they've always wanted. Was it from Luke Burbank, a guy who won the lottery and recreated the mini mart where he bought his ticket right in his backyard? From Jesse Klein, an internet millionaire who decided to spend his money remaking the movies or the endings of the movies that he wanted to see? Or from Tom Baudet, a Serbian tennis star who took his money and bought up the world's supply of donkey cheese just to make sure that you can't have any? Which of these is the real story of money well spent?
Oh, boy. I'm going to go with Tom and donkey cheese.
You're going to go with Tom's story of donkey cheese.
Absolutely.
He just wanted to say donkey cheese.
Don't we all? All right. You have chosen, then, Tom's story of the tennis player who wanted all the donkey cheese there is. Well, we spoke to somebody who knew about this story.
I really never had Novak Djokovic pegged to be a donkey cheese guy. There's really nothing in his game that would lead one to think he's going to buy up all the donkey cheese.
That was Dom Cosentino from Deadspin.com talking about the tennis player who did indeed buy all the donkey cheese there is in the world. Congratulations, you got it right, Peter. You earned a point for Tom Baudet. You've earned your prize, Carl's voice, on your voicemail. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Rockfoot and Greer and Slippery Bree, all of these cheeses, they happen to me. Oh, please.
And now the game where we ask people who know a lot about something they don't know. Dr. Francis Collins is the director of the National Institutes of Health, which, among other things, means he is going to outlive us all. We're delighted to have him here with us. Dr. Collins, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
Very exciting. So before we get started, tell me, for those who don't know, what is the National Institutes of Health?
Well, it is the world's largest supporter of biomedical research,
yeah.
Supported by the American taxpayers, all of you who are sitting there listening or on the radio. This is what your money is doing to try to find answers to cancer, diabetes, heart disease, rare diseases, common diseases, and make the world a better place with people being healthier.
Wow. So it's my money going to your work?
That's right. And I must say it would be better if you gave more, but it is what it is.
All right.
They're working on it.
Since we're paying for it, can we just walk in whenever we want and ask you to, like, look at this rash that won't go away?
Your rash? I'm not so sure.
No, I understand. Oh, somebody told you then.
We do have, right here where I'm sitting on the NIH campus in Bethesda, Maryland, a 240-bed research hospital. But in order to come here, you have to be on a clinical protocol, so you'd have to be willing to sort of take part in some kind of therapeutic experiment. Is your rash ready for that?
Sounds like fun, Peter.
It really does.
Dr. Collins, what is the daily recommended servings of donkey cheese?
Can I ask a quick silly question? Since it's cold season, and Tom and I were talking before the show, I am pro Purell. He is con Purell. What is the answer to that?
So we should just say that this is the, you know, you're seeing these bottles everywhere of these disinfectants, antibacterial lotions you rub on your, you rub in your hands to keep from transmitting diseases.
And so, should we drink it?
Right. Yeah.
I like to bathe in Purell.
Right. Well, Dr. Collins, my reason for being Purell is because I read a study that it really doesn't kill the bad germs, it kills the easy ones, and that it actually makes germs stronger.
But then I was all like, I see Purell in the hospital all the time, Tom.
Yeah, but where are the super germs coming from, right? Hospital.
What is the answer?
The answer is, especially in hospitals, you need to wash your hands, clean your hands after every interaction. So, yeah, I'm pro Purell, and I do not receive any remuneration for making that statement.
All right.
Thank you. I'm going to continue to mix a little vodka into my Purell.
Okay.
And just make sure I'm healthy.
And I will continue to sniff it. Well, I have to ask, though, you're up there in your high horse or whatever you sit on at work and telling us, well, what, do you have any unhealthy habits yourself?
Well, I ride a Harley. And
that'll kill you.
Yeah, that's probably not the safest, but it is a rush, let me tell you.
Oh, I know. What's your, speaking as one Harley guy to another, what's your ride?
It's a Road King Classic.
Really?
Yeah.
I had one of those all summer. I was riding it around.
Oh, it's a beast. Yeah,
they're fun. And, you know,
I get a room, guys.
Yeah.
Easy Wild Hogs.
And we also understand that you're in a band.
I am in a rock and roll band.
Are you really? Who else is in the band?
Nobody you would know, but I've occasionally been able to jam with people you've heard of, like Joe Perry, for instance, which is a rush, too.
That is a rush. How did you end up jamming with Joe Perry from Aerosmith?
There was initially an effort here to try to make science cool, which was a bit of a hard...
But then they gave up?
Yeah. We're still working on it, but anyway, that resulted in a video. If you go to YouTube and just punch in Joe Perry and Francis Collins, you can see it, but I wouldn't recommend it unless you've had a drink.
I have to ask one last question. Medical marijuana, what's your opinion?
Oh, my. Remember, I'm a government employee.
I understand. That's why I wanted to ask.
It needs a lot of study.
And how do you
And you're the guy to do it.
Exactly. I appreciate your discretion, Dr. Collins.
Well, yes.
Is that why you guys did that study? I can't believe we have hands.
Well, Dr. Collins, we're delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Ow!
So... That's not the name of the game. I just stomped on Carl's foot. No, that's the game. You're a brilliant scientist and physician. You're the head of a powerful research institution. But there are some people who you just can't help. We mean athletes who keep finding interesting ways of injuring themselves. Working with a list from the L.A. Times, we're going to ask you about three surprising injuries. Answer two of these questions. You win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Dr. Francis Collins playing for?
Now, Dr. Collins is playing for Polly Siegel of Los Angeles, California.
All right. Here, Dr. Collins, is your first question. Roger Craig managed the San Francisco Giants in the 80s and 90s. He showed up at the game one day with a bandage on his hand, and he fessed up to the reason for his injury when the reporters asked, what was it? A, he tried to punch a sportscaster on the TV. B, he cut his hand on a bra strap. Or C, he tried to swat a fly on his hand with a knife.
Well, those all seem pretty plausible, actually.
Well, it could happen.
I think I'm going to go with C. You can just sort of see that happening. You know, I'm like buttering my bread and all of a sudden there's this fly and, well, it just went all wrong.
That sounds more like a memoir than an explanation. I'm afraid it was B. He cut his hand on a bra strap.
Oh, my.
We're wondering what kind of woman he dates and what kind of lingerie she purchases, but that's what he said.
That's one of those stories that you know it was something way worse.
Really?
Because, like, if that's your cover story...
Next question. You still have two chances, Dr. Collins. In 1998, Arizona pitcher Brian Anderson showed up to work with a bad burn. What had happened? A, he tested an iron to see if it was hot with the side of his face. B, his hands were cold, so he put them in the toaster to warm them up. Or C, he burned his hand on a hot bra strap.
I'm going to go, I guess, with the hands in the toaster.
Really? So he's like, oh my gosh, I'm a Major League Baseball pitcher. My hands are cold because I was outside. I know I shall depress the levers on the toaster, put my hands in them until such time as they are warm and comfortable. Is that your theory, Dr. Collins?
Well, you've illuminated it a bit, but yeah, that's the general idea.
Maybe I won't use Purell.
You know, you describe it in a way that suddenly it seemed less plausible. So we're going to go with the iron on the face.
That's what he did. He ironed his face. He was still able to play despite the iron burn on his cheek. On his jaw, it went tss. But later he hurt his pitching arm while shopping. So, all right, last question. Here we go. Perhaps the greatest sports injury of all time was suffered by a Red Sox player, a pitcher named Clarence Bleffen. Back in the 1920s, he had to leave the game on one instance when what happened? A, a passing seagull dropped a lobster on his head, knocking him out. B, he pitched the ball right past the batter into the net. It bounced back, hit him in the head, and knocked him out. Or C, he bit himself on the butt.
I'm struggling here.
Yeah.
I guess I'm going to go with a seagull. It's just too adorable. Okay, I take it by the silence that maybe I want to rethink that one.
You unraveled the human genome. Who am I to...
Must have been that springy net thing. I knew it all along.
You're going to go for the springy net?
B.
No, actually, he bit himself on the butt.
Oh,
what?
This is what happened. Bleffen had dentures, and he was known for when he ran the bases, which he didn't always do as a pitcher, but when he ran the bases, he would take them out and put them in his pocket. And once, on one occasion, he was sliding into second base, and he did it just the wrong way, and the dentures bit his butt so badly he had to leave the game. True story. Carl, how did Francis Collins do on our show?
Well, Dr. Collins needed at least two correct answers to win for Polly Siegel. He had just one.
And that was a struggle.
Well, you know, I just want to say, because I happen to have friends who are in the sciences and they apply for NIH grants, and many of them don't get them. It's very competitive. Will this do a little for your sympathy for those poor guys out there?
Yeah, it's just changed my life.
There you are. Dr. Francis Collins is director of the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Collins, thank you so much for being with us on Great Way. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Carl insists on rewatching his favorite movie, Hot Tub Rhyme Machine. It's our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Jesse, police in Arizona say drug cartels have found a fun new way to smuggle drugs across the border with Mexico. How are they doing it?
Well, there was a story that I read. I don't know if it's related to this. Was this the breast implant story?
This was not the breast implant story. Although, frankly, I'm much more interested
in another fun story.
Just a question, getting the marijuana over the border, over the border fence, specifically.
Over the border fence. Just maybe hitting it with a wiffle bat.
That's a good idea.
That does sound like fun. It's apparently the one thing that drug smuggling has in common with timeouts at an NBA game.
A unicycle team performed?
Yeah, she said dancers? Oh, a t-shirt thing?
A t-shirt cannon, yes.
A t-shirt cannon?
They shot the marijuana over the border fence with a t-shirt cannon, or a cannon like that one.
We live in the best continent.
We really do.
That's awesome.
Other continents get rain and snow. We get cans of marijuana falling from the sky.
Did someone shout, y'all ready for this, right before
that?
Happened?
Yeah, right. I just hope. I just hope, as with keeping with the NBA tradition, that the cannon was fired by the smuggler's mascot.
Yeah.
Narco the border terrorist, you know.
Yeah.
He's got a big foam head, mustache, bandoliers. It's...
I have the worst luck with this. I'm always like, me, and then it goes like 40 rows behind me.
Well, that's
and
the other
I never
question.
Get high. That's
the other question. Who was supposed to catch it? Why didn't they catch it?
Don't you feel like at a certain point we should just let them do it? Like, okay, well played, smugglers.
Yeah.
You got a t-shirt cannon.
Yeah.
You got cans somehow. You put weed in there. You shot it. You know what? Get high.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Like, it's fine.
Luke, some exciting news from New Zealand. Three new residents there passed their driving test this week. Who are they?
Oh, I think I saw a TV clip of this, and I'm guessing it was in New Zealand. Were they, in fact, dogs?
They were dogs, Luke. They were dogs. A New Zealand dog trainer has taught three shelter dogs to drive a car. The dogs were into it because it's a marked improvement on chasing cars by running after them. After 7 weeks of dog training, they're able to shift gears, accelerate, and brake. The shelter hopes this will up their chances of being adopted, or at least give them a vocational skill to fall back on if they're not. You thought cabs smell bad now. Wait till you get into one of the dog cabs. It'd be awful. The dog will spend the whole ride barking on the cell phone. You'd be like, where are you going, pal? Okay.
With his head out the window.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to drive.
Is Romney soon going to be riding on the top of his own car?
You got there.
Too late. Too late. Too soon.
Luke, new national standards are being implemented in schools across the country, so Catcher in the Rye, To Kill a Mockingbird, books like that, might well be replaced by what?
So those books, which are still the two probably sort of headiest books I've read because they were assigned in fourth grade.
Right.
They're replacing those with books that are maybe more seen as racially sensitive?
No.
Well, I guess Catcher in the Rye doesn't really have much of
you
that
going on.
You
didn't even read it in fourth grade, did
no,
you?
No, I didn't actually.
I think we just busted you on not reading one of the two books you brag about reading. Like,
anybody know the answer to this?
I think I do.
Well, go ahead,
Jesse. They want kids to be reading, like, instructional manuals.
That's exactly right. Specifically,
yeah.
Books
Good
like
times.
Classics like Recommended Levels of Insulation by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and that classic The Invasive Plant Inventory by California's Invasive Plant Council. Now, the Common Core standards, they stress getting students ready for the real world. And that means making sure that 70% of what kids read in school will be nonfiction. Because sure, musing about Holden Caulfield's psychological problems might be fun, but you're not going to have time for musing during your 35 years as a cubicle drone, so get cracking on that technical manual now. That's the thinking. This means goodbye, Huck Finn. Hello, Executive Order 13423, Strengthening Federal Environmental Energy and Transportation Management. Those are all titles on the recommended reading list.
Actually, it makes perfect sense. I hope on there also are in like assembly manuals that were badly translated.
Yes, exactly.
You know
what's going to happen. The kids aren't going to apply themselves. They're all going to wait till the last minute and then go out and get the movie version of the invasive plant directory. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And you can check out the How to Do Everything podcast. This week, none other than Jesse Klein tells you how to be a stand-up comedian. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Who's this?
Morgan Hartman from Miami.
Hey, Morgan, how are you?
I'm doing great.
That's great. Morgan is a nice name. And Miami is a beautiful place. What do you do there?
I work for a wine import company. We import wine from Argentina, and I cover the Southeast. But I sell a lot of wine to Miami.
You do? Mm-hmm. Is a particular kind of wine that Miami enjoys?
Malbec.
Really?
Malbec is hot.
Malbec is hot?
Yep.
Let me ask you a question, because I'm always genuinely curious. Can people really tell the difference, or is it just like, oh, I want a Malbec because that's what's hot?
Well, it depends on how much you drink. At the beginning, the first sip you can tell, but after about five, no.
Really?
Doesn't matter.
I feel like you just gave up a big secret.
Yeah. That's when I just start drinking the spittoon.
Yeah.
It's fine. You don't notice. Don't get proud.
Well, welcome to the show, Morgan. It's a pleasure to have you. Of course, Carl Castle is now going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can successfully complete two out of three of these limericks, you will be a winner. You ready to play?
I am.
All right. Here is your first limerick.
As our first baby's having a tinkle, our party plans suffer a wrinkle. We can't spare an hour to hold a whole shower. We'll settle for just a small...
sprinkle?
Right! For the second kid, we learned this week, many moms are now skipping the big elaborate baby shower and they're going with a more low-key event called a baby sprinkle. Among the suggested gifts, a smock to protect against the other kind of baby sprinkle. The idea is that instead of bringing the more big-ticket items like, you know, cribs and strollers, guests bring more practical gifts for moms of multiple kids, like diapers or effective birth control.
Well, also get the new arrival used to living in their older sibling's shadow right off the
exactly,
bat.
Exactly, yeah. Know? Here is your next limerick.
The queen sets aside her wee tea. This Christmas, she says, come see me. When giving my speech, I will seem within reach. I will be filmed and broadcast in...
TV?
Not TV. It's sort of a format.
I'm stumped.
How about 3D?
Yeah. 3D?
For the first time ever, Queen Elizabeth's annual televised Christmas greeting will be delivered to viewers in 3D. Because if there's anything that's really better in 3D that gains from that format, it's an old lady sitting perfectly still.
This is just her way of saying to Prince Charles, I'm going to live forever.
Here is your last limerick.
We're update obsessed teens and tweens, and our pants will tell where we have been. The cloth in our seats is sending out tweets. Our updates are sent from our...
jeans?
Yes! An Italian jeans maker has created jeans that automatically tweet your location and mood, as selected by you. The jeans also tweet their own messages like, God, please wash me, it's been weeks. They hope it'll be more successful than their tweeting corduroys, which would only tweet hashtag...
How do your jeans know your mood?
Yeah. Well, that's a good...
Maybe I should have just accepted
Tom,
that.
Please.
Yeah.
Apparently, what you do is
call me old-fashioned.
There's a little control panel that you press. You say, oh, I'm in a happy mood, and you press the happy button, and your jeans tweet.
Oh, I see. So you can... I see. So it's not like a mood ring where your jeans just sort of know.
Yeah. Right.
I'm feeling gassy.
Yeah.
Just one example. There's many more that could suddenly popped into my head.
Italians came up with
this. The Italians?
Ironic, because they wear their jeans so tight, you know how they're feeling.
Yeah.
From six blocks away.
Carl, how did Morgan do in our quiz?
Morgan, you had two correct answers, so congratulations. You win our prize.
Well done. Thanks for playing, Morgan.
Thank you very much.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Jesse Klein and Tom Baudet, they both have 3 points each. They are in the lead. Luke Burbank has 2 points.
So, Luke, you are up first because you're in third place. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill-in-the-blank. On Thursday, Susan Rice withdrew her name from consideration for blank.
Secretary of State.
Right. On Tuesday, the United States formally recognized the rebel coalition in blank.
Syria.
Right. The Calm Act, a law designed to make blanks quieter, went into effect on Thursday.
Television commercials.
Right. A Baltimore man is contesting a speeding ticket from a speed camera because he says that photos clearly show blank.
That he was too drunk to be going that fast.
No, and he says they show that he was stopped at a red light. He wasn't even moving. Welterweight boxer Manny Pacquiao had a backstage visit from blank just before the fight where he was knocked out.
The Romneys.
Yes. Lincoln and Zero Dark 30 were among the top nominees Thursday for this year's blank.
Golden Globes.
Right. To cater to hardcore music lovers, a new Swedish company is offering blanks equipped with a sound system.
Coffins.
Yes! Very good. Sure. Did you know that, or did you just want that?
I think I dreamed it into existence.
Yeah, you are.
I hoped it into being.
Sure, being dead is boring, but it will be a lot more fun if you have a catacoffin. That's a new coffin equipped with stereo. Playlists can be managed online so that your friends and loved ones can either entertain you in the afterlife with the latest hits or torment you for all eternity with an endless loop of the Dave Matthews Band. Carl, how did Luke do in our quiz?
Luke had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and Luke has the lead.
We flipped a coin. Tom has elected to go second. Here we go, Tom. Protests continued in Michigan after Governor Rick Snyder signed legislation making Michigan a right-to-blank state.
Work.
Yes. After she came down with a stomach virus, blank canceled her trip to the Middle East.
Hillary Clinton.
Right. Delta Airlines announced it would be buying 49% of Richard Branson's airline, blank.
Oh, Virgin Airlines.
Right. An IKEA in Toronto made headlines around the world when a blank was found there.
A macaque.
Which is a monkey in a coat. A British man was ejected from a darts tournament for distracting the crowd by blanking.
Throwing darts at them.
By looking too much like Jesus. Public Enemy, Donna Summer, and Rush were among those named this week for induction into blank.
Oh, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yes, police foiled a murder-for-hire plot aimed at blank.
The Bieber.
The Justin Bieber, yes. After the New York Times ran a scathing review trashing every item at celebrity chef Guy Fieri's new restaurant, the restaurant immediately blanked.
It did a booming business.
Exactly right. People who read the review panning the food at Guy's American Kitchen near Times Square were intrigued. Could everything really taste as horrible as the review claimed? The restaurant was immediately packed with diners exclaiming, yes, the watermelon margarita does taste like a combination of radiator fluid and formaldehyde.
It's like the producers of restaurants.
It really is. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. He now has 17 points, and Tom has taken the lead.
Well done. All right. So how many, then, does the lovely Ms. Klein need to win?
7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
Oh, boy.
All right, here we go, Jesse. This is for the game. Bruce Springsteen and Bon Jovi were among the performers at the 12-12-12 concert for blank relief.
Sandy.
Right on Thursday, former Florida Governor Charlie Crist filed paperwork to officially become a blank.
Priest. I don't know. You've already
Unlikely.
Said all the news I know.
A Democrat. After being deported from Guatemala, software mogul blank returned to Miami.
McAfee.
Yeah, John McAfee. The Indian sitar legend who influenced the Beatles, blank, died this week at age 92.
Ravi Shankar.
Right. Because it's gotten over the required 25,000 signatures, the White House now has to respond to a petition demanding blank.
Oy, I don't know.
The construction of a Death Star. Good one, nerds. Because of the scandal involving his extramarital affair, Barbara Walters named blank as the most fascinating person of the year.
Petraeus.
Yes. Scientists claim they finally found a cure for the common cold, and it is blank.
Purell.
No, it is beer. The study must be true because it was sponsored by the Sapporo Brewery of Japan. Of course, you'll have to drink a lot, probably 30 cans of beer or more to have any effect.
Done.
Why didn't he tell us?
The study also shows that drinking 30 beers makes you way sexier as long as the person looking at you drinks 50 beers. Carl, did Jesse do well enough to win?
She needed 7 correct answers to tie, but Jesse had just 4 correct answers. So with 17 points, Tom Baudet is this week's champion.
Well deserved.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists what newsmakers are getting for Christmas this year. But first, let me tell you that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and Progressive.com. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at GatesFoundation.org. And the Pimsleur Language Programs, offering tools to say happy holidays in more than 50 languages with 30-minute daily lessons at Pimsleur.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler James Green. Our volunteer coordinator is Ray Teresi. Our intern is Leah, all the king's horses and all the king's menzer. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Lester Larchick and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Thanks this week to Mr. Gary Yek. Our production coordinator is Mr. Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Linwood Danforth. Now, panel, tell us who's getting what in their stocking. Tom Baudet.
Governor Chris Christie gets a commemorative recording of the 12-12-12 Hurricane Sandy benefit concert signed by Bruce Springsteen, Mick Jagger, Paul McCartney, and the surviving members of Nirvana, titled Smells Like Old Man Smell.
Jesse Klein.
I think Wolf Blitzer will get another pair of serious but fun eyeglass frames.
And Luke Burbank.
For John Boehner, a nearly finished punch card for Tropic Tan Tanning Salon in Silver Springs.
Well, if any of those gifts get handed out, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudet, Jesse Klein, and Mr. Luke Burbank. Thanks to all you fabulous people for listening. We love each and every one of you individually. I'm Peter Sagal, and we'll see you back here, yes, next week. This is NPR.